Just periodically fire the grid of cyclone, the tube would go in conduction and take whatever voltage you have, take the ground in microseconds, and then let it go if that's what you wanted to do. That's one way. But you could also, let's see. There are some solid state devices that will do the job, but they're expensive.
Question for Eric.
Go ahead.
Eric, in the old color TVs, they used the 6BK4 to regulate the high voltage at 27,000 volts. Couldn't he use that to bring that 5,000 to ground at a regulated rate on the grid supply?
Are you talking like 1B3 or something?
No, the high voltage regulator, it was a triode, a 6BK4. It was regulating the 27kV right on the second anode.
Yeah, no, if you would have used that, you'd melt the tube.
At the frequency he's swinging that at?
If I remember correctly, those tubes would not take any kind of current. The grid would get vaporized. The way those things operated, they were all floating, and you're talking microamps.
Okay, I just thought that would be one way he could do it, because I know those things could handle some current, but you're saying no. Alrighty.
Eric, do you know of any Cyrotron-like devices, silicon-controlled rectifier-like solid-state devices that can switch 5 kilovolts at some reasonable rate? I think you're going to say they're all pretty expensive. Over to you, Eric.
The tube thing.
Yeah, there actually are some SCRs. There are also some triacs. And believe it or not, there's some unijunctions that are worth at 7,000 volts. But they're big. They require big heat sinking. They are fast, though.
Thinking about expenses.
I remember those Unitron, unipolar transistors. Boy, they were fun oscillating devices. Sounds like Mel's got a... If I know Mel, in his museum, in the left-hand, in the northwest corner of his basement, in the real, where the good stuff in the museum is, he may have the exact tube. Go ahead, Mel.
Yeah. Eric was pretty close, John was also. The 6BK4, the shunt regulator, used in the color TV, the early versions, was superseded then by a tube called a 6EL4. And a 6EL4 could go up to 55,000 volts and have a plate dissipation of about 25 watts. So you could easily go 1.5, maybe 2 mils on it, over.
You're going to melt it. Yeah, I think he's looking for pulses of much bigger current than a few mils. I think he'd like a fraction of an ampere during his pulses. So I think he needs something a little stoochier. And maybe silicon controlled rectifier triac-like devices. Triac, what I'm looking for? There's four-layer type solid-state devices. I bet you know where some of those are located. Is that true, Eric?
Yeah, I got some in my transmitter. The one that's no longer being used. But those components weren't cheap. I could actually come... They were made by Thompson, if I remember correctly, and I know I've had to replace one of them. Boy, when it fried, it fried. I could probably look up the part numbers and pass them along next week. Or if it's to you, Wesley, I can, you know, pass it along to you sooner. But they do require a little bit of support circuitry.
Out of curiosity, was that part of a crowbar protection circuit?
Now, the crowbar uses a deuterium-filled cyclotron. These are in the pre-driver circuit because they're a much lower voltage. And they are actually part of a crowbar, too, for that part of the transmitter.
Yeah, John, in a second. The only thing we got to worry about a little bit more here, Eric, is that I'm pretty sure that Wesley is looking for conducting these pulses a lot of times per second. He probably like 10 kilohertz if he can get it. Over to you, Eric.
The maximum 100 kilohertz would be good, but if it's 30 kilohertz, it's okay.
Yeah, the speed isn't the problem, as long as we get rid of the heat.
Okay, so maybe next week you'll have a couple of suggestions. That's a possibility. You got it, John.
Yes, Wesley, I'd like to know what's the, that 5,000 volt power supply, what's the maximum current? It's not that high, is it?
250.
250 milliamps?
350.
Yeah, it's 350, but are the units microamps or milliamps? Over to you, Wesley.
What it says on its model PS350, 5,000 volts, 25 watts.
6EL4, should it handle it?
Do you see it on your computer? I mean, this device looks like a lady. It's so beautiful.
Sounds like mostly the capacitor smoke in. Siemens champion capacitor smoker back in.
Can you mel?
If it's a continuous 5 kilovolts at 25 watts, the current is very small. It's well under a milliamp, but maybe I made the mistake of the way that I did the calculation. Over to you, John.
Why, to 6EL4, as I suggested, go up to 55,000 volts, up to 2 mils, about 25 watts dissipation, Dick.
Yeah, but taking it to ground?
Yeah, but look at the duty cycle, so look at the energy transfer.
Can you smoke like you pass the mat?
Yeah, if it was a continuous current of 5 milliamps at 5,000 volts, that would be 25 watts. So that current sounds like a little bit too small for what I think Wesley's trying to do.
55,000 volts at 2 milliamps. At half that voltage, Dick, you can go way up much higher with the current, over.
DC2, QAQ.
Go ahead, Glenn.
I was just looking at some of the ratings on some of these little solid-state spark gaps, these little tiny things. And basically right now, they do have them in voltage ranges to 5,000 volts. I'm looking at it right now. It says they're low capacitance. They're 0.8 picofarads. And the response time of them is 1 nanosecond. That sounds pretty quick.
What do you believe is the maximum current they can tolerate, though, Glenn?
Well, they rate these things in joules, so I guess it depends on for how long you're doing it. But right now, I think the maximum ratings are 5,000 volts, 500 milliamps.
Okay, you think it's 500 milliamps maximum at 5,000 volts? And do you know the number of joules of dissipation is not the right word. It's an impulsing device. Are we talking about joules of dissipation or joules of delivered energy? What do you think, Glenn?
Yeah, I'm looking at something right over here that says like 9 joules, but I'm trying to get that answer for you. I'm not really sure just yet. But I'm pretty sure it's just the impulse energy. It's definitely not just, that's a tough call. I'm not sure.
Hey, the device you're talking about is an amp in milliseconds.
Maybe I have another idea. I can use the master. That's a precision power amplifier. When I raise DC, I'm getting, with DC, I'm getting maximum 1500 volts. 1500 volts and pretty decent current. Now, if I just use the voltage doubler, three times to get to 5000 volts, what do you think about it, Dick?
But it repeat.
I'm not sure that, it'll operate fast enough is the thing I'm worried about now. And by the way, making pulses and frequency and voltage doubling, that's difficult. To build a voltage doubler or tripler circuit and to build it into a pulsing network simultaneously, I think is a little bit of a conflict. I wonder how you see that, Eric. Go ahead.
Sorry, but voltage doublers and triplers need some time constants. You've got to be charging some stuff up, you know?
Yeah, to make a simultaneous voltage tripler and a pulser at the same time, that's a tough requirement. Don't think we've got a complete solution here yet.
Okay, I have another solution.
Polish.
I have another power supply that is not that beautiful, but it's a good stuff. 5,000 volt and pretty decent decent current. Probably around 250 milliamps steady. Would that one work with the Triggertron?
Smoke like you, man. Smoke like you, man. Smoke it. Smoke it. Smoke it.
Wesley, do you have an email that you're willing to give out over the air? I have a very interesting circuit for solid-state circuits, if you're interested in doing these for the kinds of pulses that you might be interested in.
QRZ.com.
One more time.
QRZ.com. If you log into QRZ.com, you're going to see my email over there.
Go to bed tonight, Leslie. Don't forget to dream about smoking Nike Man.
Can you give me your call again real quick?
Dick, why don't you end it?
Right. I say, when you log to QRZ.com, QRZ.com, then you're going to see my email over there on my call sign.
Give me your call sign one more time real quick. KC2QIQ.
Nike Man, sir.
November 2 X-ray Juliet November. November 2 X-ray Juliet November.
Thank you.
Leslie, dream about smoking my cabasa tonight, okay?
Eric, unfortunately, I think you're right.
Hey, guys, so thank you very much for all your help. I'm delighted with your company. And there's so much attention that I've got from all of you. And to XGN.
Okay, Wesley, sweet dreams. Remember Mikey Bassa.
12:26 a.m. 73. And good night from the W2VL repeater.
All right, K2RW, K2J. You can go to the other machine and give it your closing words.
Communications Commission has come to the aid of a ham radio operator who's been suffering interference
believed to be coming from a neighbor's home. Amateur Radio Newsline's Norm Seeley, KI7UP, is here with the details.
In a September 3rd letter to an unidentified homeowner, FCC Special Counsel Laura Smith wrote that the agency had received a complaint that an electrical device, possibly a faulty doorbell transformer, apparently located on the homeowner's property, may be causing harmful radio interference to a nearby ham radio operator's station. In her letter, Smith noted that the agency's rules state that if the interference is caused by faulty consumer equipment, the FCC has the responsibility to require that such problems be rectified within a reasonable length of time. She noted that under FCC rules, certain types of equipment are classified as unintentional radiators. These are the devices that generate radio frequency energy, but do not intentionally radiate it. Some common examples include computers, radio receivers, and television sets. She went on to note that some of these devices are imported and do not comply with commission certification standards, and thereby result in interference to other radio services. Smith continued by telling the homeowner that if the source of the interference is an unintentional radiator, and if the device has FCC approval, that it should have a silver FCC label on the unit showing a certification number. But writes Smith, even an approved device can only be operated legally if it is not causing harmful interference to a licensed radio service. Smith notes that the ham who filed the complaint has attempted unsuccessfully to resolve this problem, and as a result, the matter has been referred to her office. She goes on to warn the homeowner that while the commission has confidence that most people are able to resolve these issues voluntarily, it wants to make the homeowner aware that this unresolved problem may be a violation of the agency's rules and could result in a monetary forfeiture or fine for each occurrence. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Norm Seeley, KI7UP, reporting from Scottsdale, Arizona.
Smith then gave the homeowner the customary 30 days to advise her office as to what steps have been taken to correct this interference problem. Authorities say a Phoenix, Arizona Boy Scout troop had been rescued near the city of Prescott. This after radioing for help via amateur radio. The Yavapai County Sheriff's Office says one troop became stranded in the Pine Mountain Wilderness. The scouts were reportedly close to running out of drinking water, and one scout had fallen ill when they radioed for help. According to a newspaper account, one troop leader was able to relay GPS coordinates to a Prescott resident who received the troop's call for assistance on his ham radio station. He, in turn, notified county authorities. The scouts were rescued by the State Department of Public Safety helicopter on Saturday night, September 25th. Authorities say the scouts and their leaders were all in good condition and did not require medical attention. The scouting troop included two adults and six children under the age of 15. They were in the mountains with other scout teams, learning to use signal mirrors in case of an emergency and climb different peaks to signal one another. But in the end, it was ham radio rather than mirrors that led to their rescue. Due to the ages of those involved, no names or call signs are included in the news stories on this Arizona mountain rescue. Turning to the geopolitical scene, when the Netherlands Antilles is dissolved on October the 10th, it'll have a major impact on amateur radio in general, and the ARRL's DXCC Awards program in particular. Now, in a statement released by the ARRL, the league says that to clarify the administrative process by which the anticipated changes to the two existing Netherlands Antilles DXCC entities will be made, the ARRL Awards Committee has determined the following policy. First, at 0400 UTC on October the 10th, the two current Netherlands Antilles DXCC entities will be deleted. At the exact same time, operations from the islands of Curaçao, Bonaire, Sint Maarten, Saba, and St. Eustatius will count for a yet-to-be-determined number of new entities. This under the DXCC list rule number 1 for criteria and political entities, and or geographic rule number 2. The latter deals with separation of entities. When the awards committee determines what rule number 1 or rule number 2 actions apply in each case, it will announce the final disposition of the entities on the DXCC list. Finally, the DXCC desk says that it will not accept confirmations for these new entities until after January the 1st, 2011. A town in suburban New York has imposed restrictions on the placement of new cellular telephone towers that are said to be amongst the toughest in the United States. The town of Hempstead, just east of New York City on Long Island, is a notable example on a list of municipalities tightening rules on where cell phone companies can place antennas. Despite a 1996 federal law prohibiting municipalities from considering health issues in approving locations for cellular antennas, a group of mothers concerned about what they consider risky cell towers outside their children's schools successfully lobbied the town of Hempstead. The town board claims that it adhered to the FCC regulations and not considering possible health effects by instead describing the vote as a quality of life issue. The ordinance, passed unanimously by the Hempstead Town Board, prohibits wireless companies from installing equipment closer than 1,500 feet to homes, daycare centers, schools, and houses of worship unless they submit compelling evidence that there is an absolute need. The town has also hired Richard Comey of the Center for Municipal Solutions as a consultant to review applications of cellular companies seeking to install new antennas or towers. Comey's company advises municipalities in 32 states on cellular tower regulations. A spokesman for one cellular provider told the press that their new Hempstead ordinance effectively bans new cellular site construction in that township. Some observers believe that the cellular industry will have no choice other than to challenge the legality of this new Hempstead law through the federal court. And while there's no mention of any other radio services being impacted by the Hempstead ordinance, there are no exemptions either. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the WB9 AET repeater serving Chicago, Illinois. A group of transmitter hunters from the USA is returning from Croatia with some medals for their efforts. Newsline's Joe Mell, K0OV, has the full report.
The World Championship of Amateur Radio Direction Finding, also called ARDF and Radio Orienteering, has just concluded. It took place in the beautiful forest near the Adriatic Sea coast of Croatia. According to rules of the International Amateur Radio Union, competitors had to find up to 5 transmitters on courses that were up to 4 miles point to point. They had maps and compasses, but the transmitters weren't marked on the map, of course. 386 radio orienteers from 32 countries took part, including 14 from the USA. Team USA's ages ranged from 25 to 68. On the first of 2 competition days, Carla Leach, KC7BLA of Bozeman, Montana, and Ruth Bromer, WB4QZG of Raleigh, North Carolina, took silver medals in the team competition for women over age 60 on the 80-meter band. They didn't actually team up on the course. That's not allowed. Everyone must find the transmitters individually with no help. But their combined scores were second only to the Russian teams, and that's how team winners are determined. It's an excellent showing because the Russians and other East Europeans, such as the Ukrainians and the Czechs, have been doing this for 50 years, and they have help from their government and from their military. On the other hand, this is only USA's 7th trip to the World Championships. On the second competition day, George Neal, KF6YKN, captured a bronze medal in the category for men ages 50 through 59 on 80 meters. This is George's second medal for the USA. He got one 2 years ago at the World Championships in Korea. Team USA members earned their position by being the best at the USA National Championships last year in Boston and this spring near Cincinnati. Watch for the announcement of next year's National Championships, which I will be making soon. Meanwhile, you can read more about our team and see photos of them in action at www.homingin.com. That's homing in, as one word, homingin.com. From Southern California, this is Joe Mell, K0 Oscar Victor, for Amateur Radio Newsline.
Our congratulations to the winners and all who took part in this international tea hunting event. What may have been a very large contest or DX station appears to have been lost in a fire burning last week in Colorado. Those watching the Weather Channel report to have seen video footage of the house burning. As the camera on board the news helicopter widened its shot, there were 3 towers and antennas clearly visible on the property. As of airtime, there's been no conclusive identity as to whom the house and the towers belong to. The Federal Communications Commission has approved the use of unlicensed broadcast spectrum known as white spaces, that the agency hopes will amount to longer-range Wi-Fi-like connections for mobile devices. In a unanimous vote on Thursday, September the 23rd, the five-member FCC said the unused spectrum between TV stations will be used for such mobile broadcast services in the hope of providing improved service to consumers on the go. Technology companies, including Google and Microsoft, had advocated the concept while it was generally opposed by broadcasters and entertainment venues. The latter had had hope for the same spectrum for wireless microphones displaced from other bands. Instead, the commission reserved two vacant UHF channels for wireless microphones and other low-power auxiliary service devices in all areas of the country. The order setting out these changes was approved 2 years ago under former FCC Chairman Kevin Martin. That policy was challenged in court by broadcasters because of concerns of interference to their wireless mics and other studio and field devices. A computer scam involving criminals targeting random computer users has been discovered in Australia, but could easily spread worldwide. Graham Kemp, VK4BB of the WIA News, has the story about how these swindlers work.
The scam involves a victim receiving a phone call from a person purporting to represent well-known computer companies, most commonly Microsoft or a company contracted by Microsoft, and telling the person they've got a problem with their computer. The caller outlines the victim's computer is infected with a virus that's been brought to the company's attention, often via the Microsoft fault reporting process. The caller then offers to assist the victim and will fix the problem by directing them to a website where the caller remotely takes over the victim's computer. The representative then shows the victim the issues with their computer and suggests they pay a fee to have the problem fixed or need to purchase software to prevent this from happening in the future. Now, this is all just a scam. Microsoft has confirmed they are not cold calling members of the community regarding viruses, computer problems, or any other issue. Quite simply, these offenders are just looking to trick you into giving them money, Detective Superintendent Brian Hay of the Queensland Crime Operations Command's Fraud and Corporate Crime Group said. Giving somebody you don't know remote access to your computer is basically the same as handing their credit card details over to them. With this access, an offender can easily search your computer for banking or personal details, or quite easily load malware or Trojan software onto your computer. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Graham Kemp, VK4BB of the WIA News in Australia.
The bottom line, no matter where you are in the world, if you get a call from anyone telling you that your computer has a virus or some other problem with it, just tell them to get lost and hang up the phone. And if such a warning comes in the form of an email, never, under any circumstances, click on the provided link. Instead, simply delete the message. You, your computer, and your wallet will be happy that you did. The Homeland Security grant is making possible for the Ionia County, Michigan Radio Amateur Civil Emergency Services to acquire new equipment and move to an office located in the county central dispatch center. Roger Packard, 88 KLU, is the RACES and Amateur Radio Emergency Services Emergency Coordinator for Ionia County. He says that this new gear gives his group the capability to talk locally, within the state, and quite literally around the world. According to the Ionia Central Standard, equipment began arriving last week. It adds that the Ionia County Radio Amateur Civil Emergency Services is getting the gear unboxed and ready for operation. The newspaper added that with the amateur radio groups and emergency services organizations in Ionia County working together, it allows for more information to be gathered, and this in turn helps keep the area safe. Isle Sound now has live chat support available. Amateur Radio Newsline talked with Chip Margelli, K7JA, who is Vice President of Amateur Radio Sales and Marketing for Isle Sound, shortly after the service came online. He says that Isle Sound is very pleased to be able to provide this new service to its dealers and to its customers.
It's been really great. This morning, in fact, when the service first came up, we got inquiries from Canada, from France, and from the UK, and it was really gratifying to see people, number one, were able to pick up on it that quickly, and secondly, we were able to help somebody, you know, so that they wouldn't have to make an overseas phone call in the case of the folks from Europe.
Chip says there's a live chat link that's located at www.hilesound.com/amateur. Just click on it, and the link will take you directly to the company's support line. Radio Amateurs of Canada has announced the re-election of several of its directors for another two-year term, beginning on January the 1st, 2011. Selected are William Gibbs, VE7 ISV, and Victor Echo 7 XS as the Radio Amateurs of Canada Director for British Columbia and the Yukon. Derek Hay, VE4 HAY, as Director for the Midwest. Bill Unger, VE3 XP, as the Director for Ontario Northeast. And Everett Price, VO1 DK, will serve as Director for Atlantic. All ran unopposed, eliminating the need for a balloted election. A big surprise in the AMSAT Board of Directors, this with the announcement that Bill Resch, N6GHZ, has tendered his resignation from the board effective September the 20th. In his letter of resignation, Resch noted that his business demands are leaving him with very little extra time to properly serve as a member of the AMSAT board. In accordance with the AMSAT bylaws, Tony Montiero, AA2TX, as the first alternate, will immediately assume the position of director until the next board election in 2011. Montiero also serves as AMSAT Vice President of Engineering. And the Radio Club of America has announced that Tim Duffy, K3LR, will be the recipient of its Barry Goldwater Radio Amateur Award. The Goldwater Award is given to an RCA member in recognition of a long record of service to the public through the use of amateur radio. Duffy joins Richard G. Summers, W6NSV, who, as reported last week, has been named to receive the Radio Club of America's Special Recognition Award. Both Duffy and Summers will receive their honors at the organization's 101st Annual Awards Banquet, to be held November 19th in New York City. Duffy will also be inducted as an RCA Fellow this year. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org, and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. From the contest corner comes word that the 2010 Pennsylvania CUSO party is literally right around the corner. Amateur Radio Newsline, Mark Abramovich, NT3V, is here with more details.
They call it the friendly party because operators here in Pennsylvania are helpful on the bands in letting others work rare stations and counties, even if they happen to be holding the frequency. Michael Coslow, N3LI, Vice President of the Nittany Amateur Radio Club and manager of the PAQSO party, says he's expecting lots of activity for the contest the weekend of October 9th and 10th. Coslow says for those who have worked the PA party in the past, there is one significant change in the scoring.
We got rid of the 1.5 point QSOs for CW. We've changed that to 2 points for each CW QSO.
It used to be only 80 meter CW QSOs were valued at 2 points. Coslow says the change was recommended and made because it will make it easier to log and compile the final score sheet. Coslow says there will also be a special event station on the air worth 200 points for each contact.
The Skyview Radio Society will be operating under K3MJW, and they are celebrating their 50th anniversary this year, which is a large part of why we had them do that. And they also are recovering very nicely from disaster that hit them last year in October when they had some early snowfalls, which took a lot of their antennas out.
Coslow says the club is based in Westmoreland County in western Pennsylvania, but also is planning to send out some stations to rare counties nearby. So if you've never worked the state QSO party, this is one worth trying out. Hope to hear you on the air. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mark Abramovich, NT3V, in Philadelphia.
For more on this fun event, just take your web browser to www.tinyurl.com/EAQSO. Turning to space radio news, word that the Planetary Society is building a spacecraft that'll sail on sunlight alone and hopes to have it completed by the end of 2010. The new solar sail project, boosted by a $1 million anonymous donation, is the beginning of an innovative program that will eventually launch three separate spacecraft over the course of several years. The program starts with LightSail 1, which will demonstrate that sunlight can propel a spacecraft in Earth orbit. LightSail 2 and 3, more ambitious, and aim to reach further into space. The solar sail propulsion is simple in concept. Light photons bounce on a mirror-like aluminized mylar sail, and as each proton hits, its momentum is transmitted through the spacecraft. Photons have no mass but lots of energy, so a solar sail space probe requires no onboard fuel. The force acts continuously, meaning a solar sail can eventually reach speeds 5 to 10 times greater than any chemical rocket. Now, some of the objects of the new solar sail project include monitoring the sun for solar storms, providing stable Earth observation platforms, and exploring our solar system without carrying a heavy propellant. For more information on this fascinating project, take your web browser to tinyurl.com/solarsailing. On the air, word that the Royal Naval Amateur Radio Society is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year with the special events call sign GB50RN on the air through October the 9th. This station will operate on CW at sideband 80 through 10 meters and on FM locally on the 2 meter and 70 centimeter band. A special anniversary award is available to listeners and licensed amateurs who hear or contact Royal Naval Amateur Radio Society members at the special event station during the remainder of the 2010 season. Full details can be found on the Society website, www.rnars.org.uk. In DX-K8ND and W9VA will be the first team to arrive at Signal Point Station on Curaçao between October the 10th and 18th, just before the October 10th date of dissolution of the Netherlands Antilles to operate Stroke PJ2. The call sign PJ2 will be used after 0400 UTC on October the 10th, when Curaçao becomes an autonomous country within the Kingdom of the Netherlands, QSL, via each operator's home call sign. KM0O will be operational stroke 9M6 from East Malaysia between November the 26th and the 30th. His main activity will be the CQWWTX contest on November the 27th and 28th as a single operator all-band entry. QSL to KM0O via his information on QRZ.com or electronically using Logbook of the World. AA5UK will be operational portable EA6 from Ibiza in the Balearic Islands from October the 16th through the 27th. His activity will be holiday style on 160 through 10 meters using mostly single sideband and various digital modes. Also look for satellite operation on various birds. QSL to his home call direct via the Bureau or electronically using either Logbook of the World or EQSL. DG5MMW will be active at Stroke 3VS from Mauritius Island between November the 1st and the 6th. His operation will likely be holiday style in the HF band. QSL to his home, call direct or via the Bureau. And for those of you who've been asking for a definition of the term holiday style, it means that the operator is likely on vacation and will not plan any specific hour of the day or the week to be on the air. Lastly, M3QQ plans to activate two rare locations within the next couple of weeks. His plans are to travel to Eniwetok Atoll on October the 9th. He'll likely operate from Eniwetok between October the 12th and the 15th, and then will travel to Yuzhelang Atoll, which has never been on the air. He plans to activate that rock from October the 16th to the 19th. His requested call signs are 77RRC for Yuzhelang Island and B73QQ for Eniwetok Island. N3QQ adds that plans on this one are subject to change with little or no notice. Again, QSL as directed on the air. And finally this week, we are all familiar with the use of RF to communicate with one another using two-way radio. But have you ever thought of what it can do and how it can play a creative process in developing dance? Well, Sonia Solari, who is an artist in residence at the Stein Studio for Electro-Instrumental Music in Amsterdam, has. Working with a team of engineers and software programmers, Solari is using electronics, radio frequency energy, and computer control to develop a new performance based on her own thoughts, feelings, and ideas, coupled with the latest in radio technology.
I use technology because it permits me to create the illusion. So usually I don't start from technology, investigating technology, and then I make a piece out of it, but it's the contrary. So that's why usually I make my own technical device, because they are for the aim of reaching that specific research.
Sonia Solari is only one of a growing number of dancers and other artists around the world who are integrating the world of electronics and communications into what they create, our sincere thanks to Marlon Berrios Solarno and the Dance Tech Net for making the sound clip of Sonia Solari available to us. For those interested in the arts, more on Dance Tech Net can be found online at www.dance-tech.net. With thanks to Allen Lab, AMSTAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn TX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, and Australia's WIA News. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. Please don't forget that in association with the Newark Amateur Radio Society, that we're currently conducting a survey to determine where these weekly Amateur Radio Newsline reports are replayed on the air. If you are a bulletin station that transmits these weekly newscasts, or a listener who has the following information, we need you to supply us the call sign of the repeater or bulletin station making the transmission, the frequency of where it can be heard, the time and days of the week, in its broadcast, time zone, and the estimated audience you think it has. Please email that information along with your name and call sign to arnschedule@gmail.com. Once again, that's arnschedule, as in Amateur Radio Newsline, arnschedule@gmail.com. And as always, we thank you for your assistance in this survey. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITM, at the editor's desk, I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2010. All rights are reserved.
The time is 1:23 a.m. 73 and good night from the W2VL repeater.
Monday morning. Yeah, and I'm on my way to work already. And how are you? From N2KZ.
Good morning, call. We spoke the other day. I think we spoke on Thursday last week. Call is KA2 Nassau County Dump NCD, handles any, and one Long Island. And we're heading to work as well. It's 5:49 now. Rainy too, by the way, here. Anyway, we're not doing too bad. At least it's only a 4-day work week for me. I'm off on Friday, so I guess it's a palatable week for me. Over to you.
Yeah, very good, Vinny. I have, I guess I have a much more casual mental logbook. And maybe advanced age, too. But very good. Yeah, it's raining here, too. And it's just the drizzliest day. What have I got, 51 degrees outside? It's getting more and more chilly. Yeah, I work a 4-day week every week, except I work 10-hour days. So we work Sunday through Wednesday, so I have Thursday, Friday, and Saturday off, which is quite a racket. But it's definitely worth the longer hours. I was working longer hours anyway. So what the heck? And let's see what's going on. Not a whole lot. Had a pretty good weekend, pretty good amateur radio weekend. Worked some folks on CW. And everything is actually pretty good. So back to you, and love that call sign from N2KZ.
That's why I've had it all these years, and I won't change it, because it works well where I live in Nassau County. And it is a dump, because they've dumped on me. I won't get into the politics of it, but hence they keep my call the way it is and won't change it to a vanity call. I'm just going to leave it. But where I work, we could operate 10-hour days, but I don't think the doctors would enjoy working 10 hours, so we don't deal with 10-hour days. Plus the fact that the one doctor that we work with is usually on call for 24/7 for a whole week, so he wants to get done with his procedures in a relatively decent hour, because if he's going to get called in at 2 in the morning, then he's back at the home front, so we don't run 10-hour days. So that's where the practice goes.
Yeah, very good. Well, I grew up in eastern Queens and spent a lot of time in Nassau County as a kid. And all I can say is, since the mid-50s, it's changed a lot. Mostly a whole lot more concrete. You know, I remember things like when the Roosevelt Field Mall was built, and you know, all that area used to be just trees and grass and rolling hills, and now there's so many houses and so much concrete, and it's just like endless. I don't know who did the zoning, but Suffolk County is no different, really. I can't believe how far Suffolk County is built out. I remember back to like the 1970s, roughly. I used to work in at radio stations out on Long Island, and I used to think Riverhead was like a zillion miles away, and now it's just another part of suburban civilization.
I recall Roosevelt Field, and maybe you might remember this. We were talking about Freedomland. That may jog your memory up in the Bronx. But if you recall, Roosevelt Field, where Macy's is, actually had a ice skating rink.
Well, it actually had an airport, too. I remember that. I spent a lot of time at Hofstra, and Hofstra still had some of the runway remains out in the parking lots there for a while. But yeah, that whole area, geez, where Fortune Off was and all that sort of stuff, those areas got so built up. Because I remember visiting places like Westbury, which at the time were very, very ritzy, fancy areas. And all of it has just turned around enormously. It's really become the Wild West out there. But yeah, I haven't lived there since, oh geez, when did I move? About 1982 or so. So it's been a while. I've been living in Westchester ever since. And that was because of the person I married and working at radio stations up in Westchester and eventually working in Manhattan. But yeah, it's been a long time. And yes, I remember Freedom Land from N2KZ.
N2KZ from KA20D. So you drive to the station and you take the train into Manhattan, is that what you do?
Well, I did that for about 30 years. I'm now in semi-retirement. I only drive down to Stamford, Connecticut, where I am right now.
So you live in Westchester and you're driving to Stamford, I got you. Yeah, I'm about 22 miles from where I work, where I live, from where I work and live, so we've gotten, since we've been chatting, I'm already on the Nassau County, Queens line, so, and from there, it's another 10 minutes. So my commute is not bad. As a matter of fact, it was a very good commute this morning. I actually left 5 minutes earlier, so we'll be at work about 6:10.
Yeah, very good. All right, then. Well, listen, I should say 73s because I am moments away from pulling into the dock, so to speak, almost literally because I work on Stamford Harbor. But great talking to you again. I promise I'll learn that call sign. It's KC2NCD, right? I think. I hope I've got that right. From N2KZ. All right, Vinny. Listen, have a great Monday. And I'm sure I'll catch you again.
I'm sure we'll talk again. Usually on this time in the morning. 73, and it's Kilo Alpha 2. KA2, Nassau County Dump. Have a good day. We'll talk to you again.
Good morning, Dumper.
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Good morning. Let's make it official. KA2NCD and 2ZEP. I heard the roads are running free this morning.
Yeah, I mean, about 5 minutes early, I'm already on the Queens. I'm already at the Queens.
Well, in that case, as long as you didn't leave any tacks on the ground, I shouldn't have a problem.
No, I was very kind this morning. So, no tacks. No nails. No piercing sharp objects. You should do okay this morning. Anyway, I don't know if you noticed, but it seems as though you normally, when schools get back into session, the traffic's usually heavier. Doesn't seem to be that time this go-around.
Yeah, it usually is heavier, but I've gotten into a habit of leaving a little bit earlier. I think I leave before the school teachers wake up. So do you.
That may be the 5 minutes. I believe 5 minutes is a lot of time. And how much more traffic can get onto the roadway in 5 minutes?
I remember when I first started making this commute, I left at about 6:15, 6:20, and I wouldn't get to the school until 7:30, quarter to 8. Now I leave 5:45, and I'm parked by 6:30, the latest.
Yeah, I'll be a touchdown by 10 after 6. So to none. When I get into purpose, but when I walk where I park, I still wind up getting into there about 6:20, not any earlier, believe it or not. But, well, what can you do? Because I have to park further away. So one compensates for the other, but at least I get a spot. I have to take a cab to get to work. Fortunately for me, I don't get a choice as to where to park. I've got an assigned spot Monday through Thursday. And it's different each day. I have to remember which day of the week it is so I decide which spot I pull into.
My spot is wherever the spot is open. So, another work week awaits us.
This is true. At least the day I don't have a reserved spot is the day that I work every other week. I'm on the four-laner, and I see lots of lights ahead of me. And fortunately, it's only two per vehicle, not three in the rear.
It was smooth sailing all the way through, so unless something developed after my passage through the four-laner, I can't speak for it.
We're driving the speed limit, but as soon as they hit the four-lane area, the traffic picked up.
It's been a drizzle rain, so the rain hasn't increased. It's been about the same the whole trip, so I don't know.
Yep. I don't know what it is with this weather. We've had nothing but rain the last couple of weeks. At least the weekend itself was nice.
Yeah, Sunday could have been nicer, but actually, they said it was going to rain Sunday night, and I think about it, it was raining last night.
Yes, but I did get to watch a very nice football game. The Jets kind of rolled over Buffalo.
They figured they hammered a mile. I didn't watch it.
I think the final score was 38-14.
And Buffalo stinks. That's the guy at work is a Buffalo fan. So, a good thing I got that game because I've been getting hammered in my football pool, that's for sure. When I looked yesterday afternoon, I was paying attention to a losing team in the Bronx that lost again, so, of Boston. So, I will focus on to the playoffs, which start Wednesday night.
Okie doke. The Jets were so confident that about two-thirds of the way through about one-third of the way through the fourth quarter, they pulled Sanchez and put in the backup quarterback.
That's good. Well, you always know when you're doing well like that, you can stop pulling the team. It's always good to get them out. Nice sport. Now you don't need them, take them out. The risk of injury really decreases.
They pulled out a couple others who weren't in perfect condition, like Nick Mangold, their center, is playing with a bumped shoulder, so they pulled him out to prevent him from injuring that again. And they didn't play Darrell Revis at all because of his hamstring. Hopefully he'll be up to speed next week. And if he is at full speed, it's going to be interesting because their other corner has been doing an admirable job filling in for him.
When is their bye week?
I don't know. It might be next week.
I'll have to look at the schedule. Because they pull them, they get a bye week. That's, it's even better. More time to recover.
Yeah, it would be great if it's next week. That would give Revis a couple of weeks in a row and to recover and see what happens. I have a very strong feeling that the hamstring injury is
directly related to his holdout. He just wasn't in proper condition.
Well, that's true, but, you know, these guys are professional, even